Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Spurs in full cry here.
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of The Extra Inch. My name is Windy, and I'm joined by my psychic and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Good evening, Windy.
And our tactics guy and my spiritual guide, Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
Hello, mate. How's it going?
New intro there for you, Nathan.
Love it.
Lo Celso's died. That's bad, right?
It's not great.
It's not the best news. It's not been the best international break, surely, just because of that. Question from Jalahil, who is J-A-L-A-H-I-L on Twitter. How detrimental do you think Lo Celso's injury will be to his integration to the team now that we're entering the critical period where Poch said he's going to be focused on building squad cohesion?
It obviously, like, we've bought this new expensive player and we're all excited to see him, and he's started to build up his minutes, and it looks like, oh, okay, you know, he's getting half an hour and it's international break, so maybe he'll be ready to start games. Oh, he's injured, and that's very disappointing. But I think, like, he's probably, like, he's behind Ndombele and Eriksen. And I think that the most important thing is settling those players together and Winks in as well, and getting that operational. I think Lo Celso is one. I said before on a previous episode that it's not the end of the world that he only arrives at the end of the window, because I think we can take our time with him. If you see him as sort of like the long-term replacement for Eriksen and also a body in midfield, it's not the end of the world that we don't have that immediately.
I could not have put it better myself. Beautifully said, Nathan. And you know, other players are getting fit right now, like Sessegnon, like Ndombele. So,
yeah,
it's, like I say, not the end of the world. We can cope. And to be honest, the attack isn't looking too bad so far.
Not at all, not at all. I also think that, like, it sort of clears up selection headaches a little bit, because you can sort of establish what you've got and then bring in an additional factor later and experiment with how that goes, rather than trying to juggle, like, who's starting when you've got 12 players.
Absolutely. Bardi, are you concerned at all?
Yeah, I'm a little bit concerned. I'm quite surprised how relaxed you guys are, because we've got like 8 games in the next 3 weeks.
Oh, shit.
And it kind of would have been useful to have Lo Celso there, because we're in the rotation now where we've got weekend Premier League and then midweek either Champions League or football or the League Cup. So I think Lo Celso being fit now would have been great for squad rotation and minutes. And it's really disappointing, especially considering this is groin that got injured, when it was clearly his ankle that they went after, the Chileans went after. So there's quite disappointing there. But I want to know why Argentina are playing like a fierce rival in a friendly. Why can't they just go play Qatar or, I don't know, play someone a little bit more friendly than an arch rival?
And arguably more importantly, why on earth are we sending a just recovered player to play for Argentina against a rival in a friendly? That doesn't seem logical to me. It, you know, the classic withdrawal from squad manager was Alex Ferguson. He would do it almost every time. And, you know, Pochettino does, he said before, he likes his players to play international football. It's a big thing to him throughout his career. He thinks it should be a big thing to them as well. But there comes a point where you've got to draw the line. And surely when a player's just getting back to fitness, it's not the best time to send them halfway across the world to play, like you say, against their rival. I don't know. Maybe they thought it would help him get match fit, but didn't seem logical to me.
Apparently they were like properly kicking the shit out of each other in their match as well. 10 yellow cards.
Yeah, I mean, it's not surprising. South American football is never one to be the most kind of relaxed affair. So, I don't know. They've just got a different mindset. It's not like if England play Germany in a friendly, even though it's quite passionate, they still understand that there's no need to boot each other. Maybe the only exception is Holland, Germany, because they never have friendlies.
Buddy, you raised a good point there about squad rotation over the next few weeks. I do feel as though with Dele back, and therefore Lamella probably dropping down to the bench, Lucas already having dropped down to the bench, and Sessegnon coming back into fitness, we've got good options there. I feel like we can cope in the short term. I think it would have been really great to have Lo Celso bedding in over this period, ready to hit the ground running over Christmas. But in terms of sheer numbers, I think we'll cope okay.
Yeah, I think so as well. But it's just because Lo Celso could end up being such a key player. It's an ideal opportunity. It's like just looking at the fixture list now, that Colchester game and that Leicester away after the trip to Greece would be like kind of ideal games where perhaps you would think about starting him.
No, fair enough. Before we crack on with listener questions, because that's what the bulk of this episode is going to be, one of you snakes has put this in the running order. Talking point three, Trippi is doing well at Atletico. Windy to apologise, Nathan to gloat. Anyone want to own up to that?
No, if I was going to snake you, I'd snake you to your face. This has got Nathan written all over it.
Nathan A. Clark.
When I put this running order together a week ago, these were the fresh topics of the day. Trippier was dropping masterclasses. We just had a Champions League draw. The window had just closed. These were the things to talk about. And now it's a week on and these things sort of seem awkward. But I do think that you're sort of avoiding addressing the topic because you do need to apologise.
Don't apologise, Wendy. You did nothing wrong. We every logical person would have thought, we knew that Trippier would work out all right at Fleck. He would work out okay there. It kind of, they could play to his strengths. It's a good solid 4-4-2 for a good solid 4-4-2 fullback. So he's doing fine.
Yeah, that's exactly my point. That was exactly my point. And Wendy said he would do badly.
Oh, okay. I must have blanked that bit out. But I need to make a note of it.
Are you asking for Wendy to apologise now?
No. I would never do that to a fellow extra incher.
He has not been attacked yet. Wait till a single player runs at him and then come back to me.
All right. We'll revisit this in January.
Yeah, absolutely. It's early days. You know, the guy can cross, what can I say? Josh Brown Spurs says, when you guys next record, it'd be great to hear your thoughts on what is our best lineup now with the squad seemingly nearing full fitness, lol. Both for low block teams and the more adventurous sides. We did touch on this in the last episode a little, but Nathan, have you revised your opinion at all?
No, yeah, so I sort of mentioned it last episode and then I sort of ran through a bunch of possibilities on Twitter on how essentially it's really hard to pick 11 from 12 players and there's sort of a thing between do we need Winks or can we operate Lo Celso and Ndombele as a two-man midfield, and if we have to drop an attacker, which attacker do we drop? If Son is the weakest of the five attackers, okay, but then what do you do about pace? All of these kind of questions, and then Lo Celso got injured. And that sort of makes all of those problems go away, at least for a while.
Sure.
And I'm just trying to be positive.
Yeah, exactly. It is a bit like that, isn't it? I also think during the season, what typically happens is someone makes a surprise burst from the squad or the youth team. And they'll cement themselves in the manager's thinking. Maybe this year it'll be Oliver Skip. Could be, for example. And that throws another spanner into the works and you end up with someone out of the team who you weren't expecting. So I guess that remains to be seen to a degree as well. I'm trying to read this Twitter name in my head and I can't quite get it. Okay, I think I'm there. MDJ Gibbo says, Kane, Dele, Eriksen and Son is still our best front four in my opinion. Do you think Ndombele and Winks will be strong and capable enough to control games, or do you think against the top teams we'll need three in there and to rest one of the four attacking players? Bardi, what do you make of that? Do you sort of see us going with a flat three in midfield against some of the better teams?
Yeah, I think so. And regards our best lineup, I think having Ndombele back and fit is really important, and I'm glad he didn't go to play with France. I think Yeah, I really liked what we saw from Ndombele and Winks when they played in the two against Villa. Yeah, I think so. I think I would go with that. I would agree.
Marshall Totten says, do any of you see the loss of Marcus Edwards today, as it was then, as something we may likely regret or very likely regret? Nathan, I'll start with you on that one.
Not in the sense that like we're in desperate need of a player of his type and that we're leaving a gap without him, but it is quite feasible that he will go on to flourish as a really good player and we'll say we sold him for pennies and we had this talented player in our academy and we let him go. We fell out with him and it was unnecessary.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the thing to say is that the loss of Edwards as he was at the end of his Spurs career is not a huge loss, obviously. I mean, that's obviously it's not a huge loss. He's played 15 minutes and he's had reported attitude problems when he's been alone at Norwich. So, yeah, clearly not a big loss. But what we are losing is the potential of what Marcus Edwards could become, what he could have become if we'd done things differently, if he'd done things differently. And it is a real pity that it's panned out this way. Now, lots of people are keen and quick to blame Edwards for this and see this as him being trouble, essentially. My counter-argument is Spurs have had Marcus Edwards on their books for many, many years, since he was a literal child. So, therefore, they had an element of control over his development, not only as a footballer, but as a person.
Yeah.
And therefore, if we're criticising his off-field behaviours, then we need to start thinking about reviewing our own internal processes and thinking about what went wrong with our work with Edwards. Because for me, it's not all down to the player, it's the club and the player. So what else is quite interesting is, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but fuck it, I'm going to say it. I've heard that Sam Shashua, who moved abroad permanently this summer, was massive trouble off the pitch as well.
We didn't hear about that on a repeated sort of front of office basis, did we?
Exactly. So no one has ever mentioned Sam Shashua being a minutes problem in public. For me, there's only one reason why Edwards is outed as a problem and Sam Shashua is not outed as a problem. And I probably don't really want to get into that discussion right now, but it's pretty obvious. It's a shame what's happened with Edwards. I hope he goes on to become a massive, massive success. I hope he scores goals against Arsenal in the Europa League. And I hope he becomes an England player. But if he doesn't, that doesn't mean he wasn't special, because he's a very talented boy. Buddy, interested to get your thoughts as someone who's a bit more sceptical of the academy.
Why am I sceptical? I think responsibility with Edwards, like you said, lies in both camps. It lies on the player and his family, and it also lies on Tottenham as well. Edwards won't be the last promising teenager to end up not fulfilling their career. You know, football's littered with prodigies. I think part of the problem was perhaps Pochettino, when he used the word, called him a new Messi or a little Messi. I think that probably put him on the map earlier than he should have been. But as I said, there's been plenty of young, promising teenagers who've gone on and never achieved what they should have achieved. So maybe Edwards would just end up as one of them. Hopefully he'll come back and just for himself and as an ex-Spurs Academy player do something. But, you know, I'm kind of like nonplussed with the whole situation. It would have been nice had it worked out, but it didn't. So good luck.
We move on. Mapsy91 says, supposing we still have Dybala money in January, would you want us to go for either him or Fernandes again, or use money to fix up the defence? Nathan, we'll start with you there.
Yeah, it's sort of tempting to say, well, we've got Lo Celso in, we've got Eriksen for another year, let's look at these other issues. But I do sort of stand with the club that, like, you also want this sort of more direct playmaker, this star boy attacker. If it's sort of a shootout between Dybala and Fernandes, if I have one big error, is that I in my scouting is I overfocus on profiles and ignore general quality. Obviously, Dybala is the mega star, but I do think Fernandes is a better fit for what we want. But yeah, we do also have problems and things to upgrade elsewhere in the squad, you know.
How about you, Bards?
I was never really for Dybala signing until he almost nearly signed. It's kind of like that I always thought we should go out and buy a right back, perhaps another centre back. But given the opportunity to have a world-class, well-established player like Dybala, I don't think you can turn down that opportunity, even if it does mean Eriksen leaving a little bit earlier. I get Fernandes is probably the long-term better project, but Dybala at Tottenham, man, come on. That would be insane.
He is the X-factor player, isn't he? He's a kind of player that could push you up a level, and that is very hard to turn down. I mean, in terms of defence, will depend on whether Alderweireld signs a contract.
I think I saw a question somewhere about maybe today someone tweeted us regarding fullbacks. Like Manchester City played they won the league with Fabian Delph at fullback. You don't have to have the greatest fullbacks in the world if you've got attacking players like De Bruyne or Dybala, these kind of guys. Maybe you can fudge it a little bit. So let's sign Dybala. Let's just do it. Ignore the right back. Put Sanchez there.
Absolutely don't put Sanchez there. I would really like a quality right back. Not that I'm against Walker Peters at all. I think he's great. I think we need another right back rotation though.
Yeah.
And Youssef Attal seemed like such a great fit. If we could get him in January, I'd be thrilled with that. I think if Alderweireld signs a contract and we get him for another couple of years, then I'm fine with the centre-back situation. I really am. So before this season, the idea to me of having Foyth and Sanchez coming through to fill the boots long-term of Vertonghen and Alderweireld was an exciting one, and I thought we'd planned that quite well. Now, a couple of slightly dodgy games for Sanchez has changed all of our thinking, and that shouldn't be the case. We should be thinking long-term here, and Sanchez is still a very talented young footballer who's got loads of potential. We shouldn't give up on him. Many people already have.
People writing him off like he's Anthony Gardner. I mean, right. Come on. You mentioned Aurier. I know Nathan was going to ignore this, but someone tweeted today that Aurier is captain for his national team. Put some respect on his name. So,
not a question. I have no answer to that.
Did he played centre-back, did he, for his national team as well?
I wanted to look into that. There was like a lineup of him playing, but I'm not familiar enough with the other players to say, no, hang on, okay. This bloke's a centre-back. I might go have a look at that if you want.
Imagine they got hit by lightning, Aurier and Sancho's training, and they've kind of body swapped into each other. And that's why Sanchez was playing right back, and Sanchez was actually playing how Aurier plays at right back.
Yeah. That's true. That's accurate. Yeah. I think you're right. Freaky Friday.
Yeah, it's more of a fighting cock theory than an extra inch theory.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, in answer to Mapsy's question, I think I'd go for the X Factor signing. But I want a right back.
How about an X Factor right back in Youssef Attal? Is that a good enough? Would you, if the right back is Attal, does that change your mind?
Use up all of the money though, does it? That's like a portion of the money.
You might.
How much do you reckon he'd cost? 30?
Maybe 40 and north of that, even. I think they've because potentially here you're in like a bidding war with PSG, you know. And if it's January.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say that. It's mid-season. We've left it longer. It becomes more expensive, naturally.
He's doing the Sessegnon. He's playing at wing most of his games now.
Right.
Which only increases his stock, stupidly.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
BLP underscore Corey says, are we capable of a Liverpool 4-3-3 style with Son, Kane, Dele or Lucas and Winks, Eriksen and Ndombele behind in the combination? Or am I a shit tactician? Nathan, is BLP Corey's a shit tactician?
No, I don't think so. Anytime you're, you know, utilising outside of the box thinking, you're doing better than most. Very well likely that exact 11 players can work out very well for us on many occasions. Maybe not always in a 4-3-3. Maybe you want to tweak that around and everything else. Yeah, that's possible. But specifically, can we play a Liverpool 4-3-3 style? The foundation of the way Liverpool play and the way that they utilise these two rapid, narrow wingers, either side of their forward who drops deep, is the way that they behave defensively. In that they defend in a medium block, they turn the ball over high up the pitch, and they break in behind and they counterattack again and again and again while the opposition are most vulnerable. And that's not just something that Pochettino can put into this team overnight or even over season. Essentially, a manager, and there's some flexibility in it, but a manager is the skills that they have. Managers don't really develop a huge amount. They might improve, they might make tweaks, they might, you know, gradually improve at certain aspects, but you don't, you're not a possession manager. And then you decide, this season, I'm going to be Jurgen Klopp. And you sort of go away for a weekend coaching course and you come back and you have your team playing Liverpool. So no, we can't become Liverpool. That's not how it works.
So it's interesting that you pinpointed the defence there, because I was going to say fullbacks and Firmino. So for me, Kane and Firmino couldn't really be more different in terms of their style. You think Kane could play that role?
I think there's a lot of similarities. I think that, you know, they both sort of straddle playing as a nine, playing as a 10. I think they're both impressive passers. I think they've both got a lot of energy. I think they're both reasonably tall. I think there's quite a few crossovers between them.
I don't see that. I really like Firmino a lot. I think he's been one of the most underrated players in the Premier League over the past two and a half seasons. He's one of my favourite players to watch as well. He's kind of like, he's like Lamella if he was faster and better.
Sure.
He drops from a nine position into deep midfield or deeper into midfield and scraps for the ball, creates chaos with his movement, and then is incredibly unselfish in the way that he then plays in Salah and Mane. For me, Kane is like, yeah, I love Kane. I love Kane dearly, but yeah, he wants the ball. He wants the ball when he wants to shift it onto either foot inside the penalty area and get shots away. And, you know, Firmino does score a lot of goals as well. He's a very good goal scorer, not the same rate as Kane. Firmino allows Salah and Mane, particularly Salah, to be the kind of star man, whereas Kane is the star man for us and he's the spearhead. So I don't think we could replicate it from that respect, but also Liverpool's fullbacks are ridiculous. They are absolutely ridiculous. So good to watch, like the way they hit the byline, but then use the ball really intelligently from there. But also, you know, have the legs to get up and down as well. And we're not there yet with our fullbacks. It might come. It might happen again. It might be this year. It might be next. But it's going to take some time. Robertson and Alexander Arnold are really exceptional. Bardi, how about you? What do you think?
Yeah, I wanted us to play 4-3-3 at the start of the season, but I just don't think we've got the legs that Liverpool have to be able to play it. I don't think our three midfields, Winks, Eriksen, and Ndombele, they're not box to box enough. They don't get around enough, especially Eriksen. I would like us to play a 4-3-3, but it would need a change of personnel. And as you said, our fullbacks don't have the engines. And Liverpool allow their defence to be exposed a little bit more because they've got Van Dijk and they've got an excellent goalkeeper. And I'm not sure we can allow Vertonghen and Alderweireld a little bit less so to be put in one-on-one situations as consistently as Liverpool do with Van Dijk.
Very fair. Next one is from Reddit. It's from _gumnut_. If Pep were to manage Spurs with this current squad, would he have us dominating games the same way City do? Bardi, how about you?
I think we would probably be a little bit closer to Pep's first Manchester City team. I think we would have the ball a lot, but then when we didn't have it, we would get punished quite badly. Mm. So that's kind of where I am. I think Pep would do a good job, but we wouldn't win the league.
He needs his Fernandinho type, doesn't he?
He needs his Fernandinho, and this is not a criticism of Man City or Pep because they have the money, so they spend it. But he needs his De Bruyne, his Bernardo Silva, and Sanes and Sterlings and everything else like that. Pep's a great manager, don't get me wrong, but you know, as he showed with his first City team, he's not a miracle worker. I don't think he can win the league with an average team. Or I'm not saying we're average, but you know, with a top six-ish team.
Nathan, we spoke quite a bit about Spurs fullbacks potentially doing the City fullback thing. How do you think it would work out if he had Spurs?
I think that it'd be very similar. I think that there are a lot of tactical similarities between Pochettino and Pep. I think they have the same principles. They might go about it slightly different ways and different tweaks and different levels of physicality and that sort of stuff. But they're very similar. I think that Pep would have the exact same issues that Pochettino does. I also think that Pep would give up and leave for some reason he was at Tottenham. I think Buddy immediately makes the best point, is that if you look at first year City, that's what it looks like when Pep doesn't have the squads that he needs.
So he'd basically need to do a lot of spending before he got it to a point where he could win the league.
Yeah, and people use that as a stick to beat Guardiola. But like as a player, you can have different strengths and weaknesses and be perfectly valid, right? Pep's ability isn't to get Cambridge United promoted, right? The role of a manager is to create a cohesive squad that is more than the sum of its parts, right? I started over that. More than the sum of its parts. And Guardiola is able to do that at the highest level of talent, right? He can take a ridiculously talented squad that has De Bruyne and two Silvers and Aguero and everyone else and push that to even the level above those individuals. That's why he's so brilliant, and he's rightly celebrated for that. Also, he's not great when he has to play a 32-year-old Bakary Sagna.
Mm. I totally agree with what Nathan said there. People will beat Pep for spending 65 million on Rodri and chucking a load of money at Laporte, but what's he not going to do? If he's got the money, he spends it. So I think Man City would have become the best team in England under Pep, had he not spent all that money as he did. But I just think it would have taken a little bit longer to get there.
Sure.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. I completely agree with that viewpoint. Okay, this is a long one, so bear with me. Sam LB86 says, "Hi Nathan, I have a KWP question. My main excitement with the change to Walker Peters from Trippier was that I presumed he was a more attacking fullback. In the games I've seen so far, he seems to be playing more cautiously than I expected. Did I presume wrong about his attribute? Or is it perhaps tactical for him to play in a similar role to Kieran Trippier? If the latter, do you think that is what Poch now wants from the position, or do you think this is a temporary measure whilst our central midfield and Walker Peters himself gain some confidence and game time?"
Yeah, I think all of those are factors. I think being attacking is like a difficult attribute to measure, because if you want to make the Trippier comparison, yes, Trippier is really good in the final third. He's a brilliant crosser. He's a great creative passer. But he didn't do a huge amount in attack for us a lot of the time because he didn't have the athletic ability to get into those positions.
Yeah,
right.
That's so often overlooked, that point. That's such a great point.
Yeah, so I think that Walker Peters is more athletic than Trippier, but he is less athletic than Walker was, right? So you're going to see a middle ground. And yeah, probably for the time being, he's playing it a little more safer than is his optimal ability, because he's only just getting consistent game time now. And yes, also perhaps on top of that, he's instructed to take it safer. And yes, on top of that, maybe we're setting up in a way to ask a little less of him in attack so that he can focus on getting his defensive basics, because realistically his weaknesses are defensive. He makes defensive mistakes because he's a young player with limited game time. So I think that we will see him over time demonstrate the attacking ability that he already has.
Plus, at the moment, he's playing in a team which has Moussa Sissoko in midfield. Yep. So there's that too. Bardi, how do you feel about the, I'm going to say, upgrade in inverted commas from Trippier to Walker Peters?
No, I like Walker Peters. I think I agree with Nathan. I think he's been a bit cautious. He's very concerned about making defensive errors, which is probably affecting his attacking play. But a lot of the problems with our fullbacks last year was our midfield, and they were constantly getting caught out of possession because they were moving into areas where the ball should have come and it never came, and they ended up looking like idiots because they were in the wrong place when the ball got turned over. Walker Peters is a massive upgrade from Trippier. He's young, he's English. So it was Trippier. I don't know what that point means. But anyway, but he's young. He's English. He's Tottenham. So I don't know where my point is gone. I've lost you can just cut all of my point out. I have nothing really to add. I like Kyle Walker-Peters. I think he's looked good. He's looked interesting. He's an upgrade of Trippier.
He's young. He's English.
He's English.
Oh my days, buddy. Fucking hell.
May I reassure you on Walker Peters' attacking abilities? It's very true to say that as yet he has not displayed his true potential in terms of what he can offer in the attacking third. But he's so good at dribbling. For the under-18s, it's not an exaggeration to say that he would literally control the game from right back at times with his dribbling. He'd come inside, he'd dictate the tempo, he'd be playing passes from that position. I'm not saying he'll directly translate that into the first team, because that's, you know, we're talking 6 years ago now. He was playing under-18 football. But he's got the ability to do that. So we might not see all of it, but we'll definitely see some of it. And when he settles into the role a bit more, we'll see a lot more from him. He got a hat-trick of assists, didn't he, in the game last season? So he's clearly capable of producing at the top level, and he just needs to play himself into the team a bit more and boost his confidence over time. And I think that'll happen naturally, and that's fine. The other thing is, you know, he's a young English fullback, and that's really good for us to have a young English player.
If Walker Peters can stay injury-free and error-free for the next couple of months, I think he might turn into be a great fullback for Tottenham Hotspur. But I think it's all in the next 6 months or so, which will define his career, because he's got the opportunity now to play. He doesn't really have any competition. The position's his, and for the first time in his Spurs career, he's going to have a proper go at this role. So it's on his shoulders now to actually make himself a great player.
I really agree with that, and I do think it is ridiculous that we're in this position where he's basically got 6 months to make himself into a Premier League player, or that's it. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be like this. He should have been on loan for like 3 seasons by now and be an established, probably Premier League footballer who's got games and games and games under his belt, but he's barely played over the last 3 years, and it's been so frustrating, and he's stagnated, and it frustrates the hell out of me.
I'm not sure whether a loan would have helped him, because he still would have come back to Spurs and he still would have questions to answer. He would still have to perform at a level that Spurs now, we operate at a much higher level than he would get at a West Ham or something like that. We play a totally different game, which needs a totally different set of qualities. So I still think he would have been questioned and under the microscope. And probably, had he gone on loan, we might have signed another right back and he would have come back as second choice backup. I think, weirdly, this is probably the best thing that's happened to him in his career, was staying at Spurs, not going anywhere, being under Pochettino's eyes the whole time. And now we go into a season with him as first choice right back.
I don't know. I'm not convinced. I think we've had a lot of success in the past with loaning fullbacks. I'm thinking Rose, I'm thinking Walker. Adam Smith, who's now an established Premier League right back, who's done very well for himself. He spent a lot of time out on loan. I'm sure there are others, but I just feel like he's wasted so much time, but maybe that's my bias. We're playing Crystal Palace at the weekend. Bardi, I think you've seen them once this year. What did you make of them?
Well, top four rivals at the moment. They're sitting in the top four.
Are they?
Yeah. I had a little peruse on their Reddit, and it was, now we're a top four team, how do we break into the top two? Which I did quite like that. You can almost guess how they're going to play. Last season, I think it was the opening game at White Hart Lane, they came with very little intent to attack and try and hit us on the break, which is kind of like the blueprint for most teams that come to visit us now. Their players aren't the most interesting. Jordan Ayew's got 2 goals in 2 games for them, which I think for a Palace striker is something that hasn't happened since probably they had Ian Wright and Mark Bright up front. They're not the most interesting teams in the world. It's a good team to play after the international break. So, you know, it should be 3 points for us, to be honest.
Are you just as confident, Nath?
I was pretty confident before Newcastle, so you know how it goes. But I think that no, we're like there's a big sort of page turning moment here is that we've had this little break, and yeah, okay, Lo Celso's got injured and that sort of dampened things, but we've closed the window, which Pochettino has been like very vocal about how happy that is. We're really settling our squads in a good way. We've had these 2 weeks off, some training time for those who didn't go. And I think that this is like, okay, the true season begins now. On Palace specifically, I haven't watched their games, but I have watched their squad building, and it's like abysmal. Like they keep adding like aged players to sort of stopgap. They sold Wan-Bissaka, their sort of one young talent, and I think that they've again spent that on you know, not young talents, but sort of shoeing things up, and now their squad is really old. And like we see how that goes for Stoke and Sunderland and Swansea and other teams beginning with S, is that it just rots away, and maybe they won't like get the worst of it this season or even this weekend, but that's going to catch up with them really soon. And I think they're heading in a pretty negative direction.
I think Hodgson is a sound enough manager though to keep them up. I think they'll always be kind of lower half, floating around relegation, but I think Hodgson's always got enough in him to keep them safe. There's enough kind of established Premier League players in there who are all right. Milivojević, Koyate, and Zaha. You know, they've got enough points in those players there to never really be in trouble of going down, I think.
Yeah, when Nathan said earlier about a good manager getting more than some of the parts out of the team, that's Hodgson all over, isn't it? He certainly is capable of that. But my God, does that man need a director of football to do his buying for him? Because that squad is a hot mess. not good at all. And as Nathan points out, it's very, very old. So Zaha, who's 26, is their second youngest player, I think. Max Meyer being the youngest at 23, and he's another one. He's kind of gone downhill since joining Palace. But yeah, they're just, you look through the squad and there's just old players left, right and centre. I do like Milivojević, like you said, Bardi. He's got quality. He's a very good midfielder. And they've kind of got spatterings of quality throughout the team. But the 11 is not consistent at all. Like, no Premier League team should really be relying on Joel Ward at right back, for example. He's just not good. He's not a good right back. Martin Kelly's probably going to play a lot of games this year. He's kind of proven that he's not good enough to be a Premier League defender. So yeah, I must admit, I fear for Palace this year. I think I like Hodgson as a manager. I think he's done wonders over the years. I don't know if they'll be like one of the 3 worst teams, but they won't be far off. They'll definitely need someone to pop up with some goals, whether that's Ayew, who's already scored 2 kind of unexpectedly. I don't know. I can't see many goals in that team, to be honest.
Whenever I think of Crystal Palace, I always think of like the stat. They always seem to be on like an 11 game streak without losing, but they never go down. Weird team.
Very weird team. So you're confident we can win, Nathan?
I certainly think we can. I'm certainly excited to see the team that we can field. I think that you know, the lineup will very much dictate my positivity, and I guess that, you know, that's always the case. But I think that especially now is it, with everything, it has been up in the air for the first 4 games, and now you want to see that sort of consistency. Okay, we're Tottenham. Here's our team. Here we go.
We're just waiting for that team news, aren't we? We want to know who's fit, who can play, who's able to play 90 minutes. Kane looked super fresh for England. He looked really, really good. And hopefully he can translate that form into the Spurs shirt. And, you know, there's no reason why we shouldn't be smashing Palace. It's just that we've all got a bit downbeat after the Newcastle game. Like you guys, I feel confident that we can comfortably win this game. So fingers crossed. Before we go, just want to say thank you very much for the very kind comments about the podcast I did with Ben Haynes, who was great.
It was good, that.
Yeah, Ben's lovely and he really knows his stuff and he kind of has a fairly unique perspective. So we'll definitely do some work with him in the future. But yeah, appreciate all the comments on Twitter. It's been lovely. Right, boys, we'll leave it there, I think.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch.
Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Barney for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindner for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at Davey Shambles and his SoundCloud D Lindner. Do check him out, he's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.